Dover Beach by Samuel Barber, sung there by baritone Henk Naven with the Elias String Quartet. Radio 3 new generation artists representing several corners of Europe, Scotland, Sweden, France and Holland. The quartet got together at the UK's Royal Northern College of Music, and Henk Naven is a graduate of the Amsterdam Conservatoire. Well, that's just the first of this summer's little windows into the work of our new generation artists, with three more programmes still to come. And next Saturday, cellist Andreas Brantelee comes into the spotlight with music by Chopin. And then soprano Marlene Christensen has a series of Mozart songs for us. And rounding off the programme, Haydn's Gypsy Rondo Trio, played by the Atos Trio. If you'd like to learn more about any of these inspiring young musicians, do have a look at the New Generation Artists website with lots of information and film clips on there, interviews and biographies, and everything to satisfy your curiosity. And the address is bbc.co.uk/radio3, and just follow the links. Bye for now.
Sarah Walker. This is BBC Radio 3. It's 29 minutes to 2, and we continue our Proms Bach Day, four concerts spread across two venues. Later, it's the turn of the Royal Albert Hall. But now, from Cadogan Hall in London, here's Catherine Bott with the second of today's four proms.
Welcome back to Cadogan Hall in London for the second of our Bach Day Brandenburg concerts, given by the English Baroque soloists, directed by Sir John Eliot Gardiner. Bach offered this presentation set of six concertos to Christian Ludwig, Margrave of Brandenburg, in 1721. With a simple aim in view, he wanted a new job, away from the stresses of the royal court in Curtin, where after a glorious beginning, the shine had worn off things a bit. His employer, Prince Leopold, so sympathetic, so friendly, so musical, was nonetheless having to make economies, and he was about to marry a princess who really couldn't care less about music. Worse than that, in 1720, Bach's wife, Maria Barbara, had died suddenly at the age of 36. It was time for a change. Now, these works were probably beyond the competence and resources of the little Brandenburg house band, and there's no evidence that the Margrave thanked Bach, paid him anything, or even considered offering him employment. 2 years later, Bach was off to Leipzig, where he and his second wife, Anna Magdalena, raised a second family, and where he remained for the rest of his life. The concertos have been known as the Brandenburgs ever since, though, and as they were almost certain to have been composed with the excellent orchestral players of Curtin in mind, they do conjure up a pleasing picture of Bach enjoying himself with friends and colleagues, never more so than in the fifth concerto with its astounding, unprecedented harpsichord part, but we'll come to that later. First, we have Concerto No. 3 in G major, a work for three trios of violins, violas, cellos, and continuo. There's a tantalizing enigma in the middle movement, which every ensemble solves in its own way. Now, to present us with their interpretation, we welcome John Eliot Gardiner and the English Baroque soloists.
Thank you. Thank you.
The English Baroque soloists in Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 3, beginning the second of our Bach Day concerts with a visceral, sensuous bang. The ensemble, founded and directed by John Elliott Gardner, has recently released an acclaimed recording of the Brandenburgs, and now John Elliott is with me on the stage. Now, I see from the Proms archive, John Elliott, that this Concerto No. 3 has been most often performed at the Proms, 80 outings since 1904.
But it never sounded like that.
No, I'm sure it didn't. So I've got a couple of sort of faintly musicological questions. That's 80 opportunities to do something with that middle movement. We got the most beautiful solo movement for violin. But what does Bach actually give you to create with?
A couple of chords, that's all.
And I'm sure back in 1904, that was all they played.
Oh, no, people have done all sorts of wacky things and written put in whole new movements there, which completely unbalances the piece. I mean, what Catti does, though, is absolutely brilliant, because it just acts as a little intermezzo, a link between those two completely crazy, prorompic movements.
Yes, you and I were sitting and sort of really boogieing on down in our wallflower seats in the corner. They were playing wonderful games with rhythmic accents, weren't they?
The great thing is these hemiolas, these threes against twos, which is just such a jazz feature, and Bach does just, he just relishes it so much. You can really feel, I think, that this was a really happy moment in his life. I mean, there were no priests to have to negotiate with. There were no bureaucrats or cantankerous mares or mayors, not female horses. And there it was really...
They get there in the end.
You sense that he was surrounded by musicians that he really had... he valued and he trusted, and that he handpicked them, which I've done with this band, actually. And you know, it's such a privilege to hear them performing with such sort of élan and abandon and yet fantastic virtuosity. But with Bach, this music was too good to lose. He had to recycle it. And the only times I get to conduct this third piano Brandenburg Concerto is when it reappears as a cantata movement, the first movement, and it's fantastic too. And also, the first movement of the first concerto we did in the earlier concert, that also comes back as a Whitson cantata, and it's phenomenal too.
Well, we know that 18th century composers were encouraged to be green with their own works and with others. Plagiarism didn't have the same sort of pejorative meaning it has now in the age of the internet. And Bach, I never quite got to grips with why Bach wrote these. He wanted a job, I said earlier, but he couldn't really offer the Margrave of Brandenburg works that he'd written to please Prince Leopold.
No, that's one of the strange kind of wrinkles of history which we just can't fathom. The chances are that he'd been writing these pieces for some while already in Weimar when he was serving a much less sympathetic duke who ended up actually being so cross with him that he incarcerated him for a month and confiscated a lot of his music. So this was a kind of sunny period, and who knows what the actual derivation was of the music. None of us really can prove that, nor how they first sounded. Chances are that Bach himself either played keyboard or played viola, which is his favorite stringed instrument, and that he really, really brought out the best of all the different elements of his little ensemble and put them in these strange permutations one to another. I mean, the next one we're about to hear is a completely batty piece, the fifth concerto, in that the harpsichord starts off in a normal continuo function and then suddenly, sort of without actually moving physical position, seems to sidle his way further and further to the front, and before you know what, he's actually... rather like a Mozart or a Haydn concerto. He's the real soloist, and he's barged his way through to the front of the orchestra, and there he is. And so there's a full-blown cadenza, and that's very exciting. And
which then, nobody had really done before
nobody
Bach,
done, nobody done
and
that
nobody
before.
Did again until Mozart.
Exactly. Well, C.P. Bach might argue with that.
we're here for Bach the father, not okay. Bach the sons today.
But then you see in the second movement, In case he gets above himself, Bach writes accompanying, please, in the harpsichord part. And then in the third movement, he sort of pops up again. So it's fascinating, the calibration of it, of these three solo instruments, the flute, the transverse flute this time, the violin. So the flute and the violin are on equal footing, really, and the harpsichord nudging forwards and then going back into the shadows.
This music is, as well as a dance, it's a conversation, isn't it?
It's a conversation piece, absolutely.
With everybody more or less equal, just sometimes some more equal than others.
And being gracious to each other, too. I mean, as in John Playford's Dancing Master of the late 17th century, you start off by honouring your partner. You set and turn single with your partner, and you're constantly aware of your physical relationship, geographical relationship, one to another. And in musical terms, that translates into balance, phrasing, sensitivity to each other. That's what it amounts to.
Well, I think it's time to go on with the dance while John Elliott Gardiner and I sit yet another one out. Today's harpsichordist is Malcolm Proud, with violinist Katy Debreczeny and flautist Rachel Beckett, joining them in this performance of Bach's Fifth Brandenburg Concerto in D major. In a moment will be the English Baroque soloists.
Thank you. Thank you.
The English Baroque soloists with flautist Rachel Beckett, violinist Katy Debrezeni, and harpsichordist Malcolm Proud in that performance of Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 5. John Elliott, a look at the archives tells me that the soloist in 1904, when this concerto had its first outing at the proms, was one Lily Henkel, who played the cadenza, of course, on the piano. Which brings us to a very good point of the indestructibility of Bach.
Absolutely.
You can play him on the synthesizer, the Jacques Lussier trio, swingle singers.
Absolutely, the lot. He's the most resistant composer. He puts up with all sorts of maltreatment.
Are you including the swingles in that?
No, I'm not, actually. I enjoy that. And I like Jacques Lussier. And I love hearing Bach on the piano. I think it's, you know, with wonderful pianists that there are today, it sounds wonderful. But I have to say, listening to that and enjoying it so much, the sheer clarity and the transparency and the delicacy is just so special. I think that's all to do with these instruments, really, and the players above all, but the instruments do have a lot to do with it. I mean, the last movement is like something from the Horse of the Year show, isn't it, really? It's sort of prancy horses and delicate, and you couldn't... I mean, wonderful though cart horses are... They wouldn't be really appropriate for that movement. It's the lightness and the filigree quality of those instruments which is so brilliant.
And with light performances and light-hearted performances like the one we've just heard, what never ceases to amaze me is that every time you hear a Brandenburg concerto, it comes up new. There are things that you have never heard before. There were things in the bass line just then.
Absolutely. And also, in the last movement, that incredible funky tune, da-dum, da-dee-dee-da-da-da-da-da-da-dum. I mean, the way that the Jane and Matthew played that, it's sort of like a sort of turboprop jet coming through. It's fantastic.
So does Bach rock for you?
Well, he does for me. But and the sad thing is that people who are perhaps put off by the theology in the Cantatas and the Passions and therefore home in on the Brandenburgs, maybe a missing out, because if you can get through that sort of first membrane of difficulty with words and theology and concepts and sin and all that sort of stuff, there is this glorious music there with a prodigious invention and somebody who enjoys all the good things of life. I mean, he wasn't the po-faced professorial type that some people think he was. In that famous portrait with his jowls and his big wig on, he also enjoyed his beer, his food, his wine, his tobacco, his family, his children.
Why do we, not you or I, or anybody in Cadogan Hall, I'm sure, but why is there a tendency to mythologize and beatify Bach? It's, sainted Bach.
Well, isn't it because he's just beyond understanding? I mean, there's something so absolutely unattainable about the control, the fantasy, I keep using that word, but it's there, and the mastery of the means of musical production, which is just so beyond human comprehension that we then put him on a pedestal. But I love to think of him as somebody who had the same doubts and the same frailties and the same tussles of conscience that we all have. And I feel particularly in his cantatas and his passions that you feel there's somebody who for whom religion was not an easy matter. He had the gift of making it sound relatively easy, but for himself, and that's what we know from the commentaries that he wrote in his own Bible, his copy of the Bible, it was a big problem for him some of the time. And why wouldn't it be for somebody who, with his 20-odd children, you know, half of them died before the age of 3 or 4. I mean, something preposterous. And he didn't have an easy time. This was one of the, one of the relatively sunny periods in his life. But as soon as he got to Leipzig, it was grim.
Now, I've read that the Bach authority, Christoph Wolff, he summed up the Brandenburgs in his own way, which seems to me to be doing them down a bit. I want to know what you think. He says, they embody a repertoire fashioned more for its instrumental diversity than for any other reason.
No, I don't agree with Christoph about that. No, I think that they surpass all that. And they are the most convivial music making possible. I mean, look at what we've got on the stage here. I mean, we've got, and this is what's brilliant. We've got here Neil Brough playing a stratospheric trumpet. It's only in the last 20 years or so that trumpeters have been able to play this natural trumpet at extreme altitude, you know, 60,000 feet. And my problem is to solve the balance between him and Rachel over there on the recorder and Michael on his oboe and Katty, because those are four totally improbable bedfellows.
We've got a musical conversation between trumpet, recorder, violin and oboe.
That's it.
And the backup team as well.
And in the fascinating old days when this was done on a piccolo D trumpet and a flute with a lot of vibrato, there wasn't much chance of ever getting it in proportion. Now we do stand a fighting chance.
Well, I think I should give you a fighting chance to prepare to go back out of the eaves from the wallflower seat. And you've got to do some work now and conduct. Okay. But thank you very much for talking
to
me today. And now I'm just going to say that we, apart from John Elliott and the players, can sit back and enjoy the dialogue as the English Baroque soloists play Concerto No. 2 in F major.
Thank you.
John Elliott Gardiner conducted the English Baroque soloists in that performance of Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 2 with violinist Katy Debreceni, recorder player Rachel Beckett, oboist Michael Niesemann, and trumpeter Neil Bruff. If you cast your minds back nearly 5 years to Radio 3's Bach Christmas, then you may remember that Brandenburg Concerto No. 2 was the work that made such an unforgettable impact on the gentlemen residents of Brixton Prison. And I hope if any of them are listening today that they've enjoyed it too. That remains unforgettable. More Bach from the Royal Albert Hall at 5 p.m. today, when organist David Briggs plays the great Passacaglia and Fugue, Sheep May Safely Graze, Sleepers Wake, and his own arrangement of Suite No. 3, which includes the famous Air on the G String. And then at 7:30, a grand finale to our Bach Day, with arrangements of his music for orchestra spanning a century or so by, among others, Henry Wood and Malcolm Sargent, two imperishable proms names to add to that of Johann Sebastian Bach. But for now, it's back to Broadcasting House and Jill Anderson.
Catherine Bott. Well, I should say at 7:30, when we return to the Albert Hall for the fourth of today's proms, there are two BBC commissions to be heard, the first performances of each of them, one by Tarek O'Regan and one by Alyssa Fiersova. And the programme begins with Stokowski's arrangement of Bach's Toccata and Fugue in D minor and ends with Respighi's arrangement of Passacaglia and Fugue in C minor. So that's the proms, the organ recital starting at 5 and the proms arrangements starting at 7:30. That's this evening. And you can hear both of those live here on BBC Radio 3. Well, coming up in 20 minutes or so, World Roots, Lucy Duran presents Serbian Gypsy Brass Music from the Boban and Marko Markovic Orchestra. That's followed by Jazz Library at 4. Ian Smith joins Alan Shipton to explore the recorded legacy of the cornet player Bix Beiderbecke. So, to take us up to World Roots, here's some music by one of Bach's sons, C.P.E. Bach. This is the Trio Sonata in B-flat, Watquen 158.
Thank you. Thank you.
Trio Sonata in B flat major by Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach, Watquen 158. It was played by the Purcell Quartet, Catherine McIntosh and Elizabeth Vulfish, violins, Richard Boothby, viola da gamba, and Robert Woolley, harpsichord. Well, let's now hear some music by C.P. Bach's father, J.S. Bach. This is from The Well-Tempered Clavier, Book 2, and it's the Prelude and Fugue in F minor, played by András Schiff.
Thank you.
András Schiff played Bach's Prelude and Fugue in F minor from Well-Tempered Clavier, Book 2. This is BBC Radio 3. Just look ahead to tomorrow.
Drama on 3, The White Devil.
Bracciano now lives in Rome and by close panderism seeks to prostitute the honour of Vittoria Corombona.
John Webster's revenge tragedy, first performed in 1612, now set in a murky underworld of the 1950s.
Who lodged beneath your roof that fatal night your husband broke his neck?
I was there.
Your business, Bracciano?
Why? I came to comfort her.
A passion so strong it drives a man to murder, and in doing so conjures up a deadly enemy.
Bracciano, I am now fit for thy encounter. I'll ne'er think thee dead till I can play at football with thy head.
Classic drama, The White Devil. Tomorrow night at 8:45 here on BBC Radio 3.
In an hour's time this afternoon at 4:00, Jazz Library, Ian Smith will be joining Alan Shipton to explore the recorded legacy of the cornet player Bix Beiderbecke, including his small group Masterworks, Singing Blues and I'm Coming Virginia. That's Jazz Library at 4:00. But it's 3:00 now, time for World Roots with Lucy Duran.
Hello. This week I'm joined by writers Garth Cartwright and Nigel Williamson to explore a crop of current CD releases that cross a multitude of boundaries through time, ethnicity and space, with music from the Balkans and Sephardic traditions from Moorish Spain. But first, the legendary Guča Brass Festival in Serbia celebrates its 50th anniversary this weekend. And we have a session with an 11-piece brass band that many claim are the greatest that have ever competed there. Playing their own brand of Serbian gypsy jazz, here's the Boban and Marko Marković Orchestra with Big Wedding. Barobiyav, or Big Wedding, performed by the Boban and Marko Markovic Orchestra in the Maidevale Studios, specially for World Roots. That was a tune composed by the 22-year-old leader of the orchestra and son of the founder, Marko Markovic. And I'll be speaking with Marko later on, and there'll be more of that electrifying brass band sound as well. First, I'm joined here in the studio by Nigel Williamson and Garth Cartwright, armed with some recent world music CD releases, as I said, with a Balkan and Sephardic theme. Before we get stuck into them, Garth, your book, Princes Amongst Men, was a road trip of sorts with the Gypsy or the Roma musicians in the Balkans. And one of the focal points of the book is the Guča Festival.
Guča's crazy. It's wild. It's the biggest free music festival in Europe. You have 400, maybe 500,000 this year people turning up to party on the streets of this little central Serbian town. They're partying not to DJs, not to rock bands, but to brass bands, largely gypsy brass bands that are playing this weird Eastern funk music that's rooted in Turkey, and it's really hard, tough, wild. Everyone's dancing on the streets, belly dancing on tables. It's just... go for it.
Well, we will hear more of that mind-blowing sound when the Boban and Marko Markovic Orchestra come back into the studios. But Garth, will you introduce the first CD that's on the table here?
The first CD this week is Zumra by two young Bosnian women, Emira and Mirima. Emira is a Sevda singer, Sevda being the traditional Turkish-influenced music of Bosnia. Mirima is an accordion player. We're going to hear the opening track. It is called... Kredim Tishe. I hope I pronounced it vaguely correctly.
Ti bacim struzu mulam, nek ti cvijet rad.